I will call to order the March 6th meeting of the Government Operations and Elections Committee. Members, in your package, you have a copy of the minutes from the meeting of March 1st. Representative Nash, have you had a chance to review the minutes, sir?
Mr. Chair, I did, and they look good. I move their approval.
I'm fine with it procedurally. You were excused that day, but maybe I should just for procedure go to someone else who was here that day, Representative Nash. So, Representative Lee.
I thought I was here.
Mr. Chair, having reviewed the minutes, I move approval of the minutes for March 1st.
Thank you. Representative Lee moves the approval of the minutes from March 1st, 2018. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. The first bill that we have on our agenda today is House File 2636. This was laid over last week. Representative Erickson was going to do some work on that bill, and she is now back with us to update us on where we are at. And I will once again take the House File 2636 off the table, bring it back before the committee. And with that, Representative Erickson, Chair Erickson, welcome back, and tell us what you know since we last met on this topic.
Well, members, thank you for hearing 2636 after it was laid over for a little research. The research has resulted in the fact that there are no amendments needed. In fact, the Minnesota Association of Township likes the bill just the way it is. They think this is the official way to do it, and they like the language. So, Mr. Chair, I would suggest that we move the bill, if that is your desire, the way it has been drafted.
Representative Erickson, you are the author on that, and we do have the bill in the form that you brought it to us, and we did discuss it, and there were some ideas. And if you want to move the bill as we had it, I'm fine with that, if that is your wish. Members, further discussion? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Erickson. The question I have is, so as it's written, who is going to be the ones that are going to be making this decision as the bill is written? And is this limit? My understanding is that the way it's written, it'd be the electors, which means that they can only do this once a year. So if, say, September, October, a need came up, they'd have to wait till the next year.
Chair Erickson. And
I see you're Representative Nelson, I'm phoning a friend to whom I've now had two conversations. So
you're representing
the Minnesota Association of Townships.
So you go way back. Having a couple of conversations, right? Somehow using the words that are oftentimes used in this room by Chair Hoppe, I thought that'd be funnier than it was. Sir, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Steve Fenske. I'm with the Minnesota Association of Townships. The way the bill is written, it refers to the governing body, which in any other part of statute, and even this part in 465, elsewhere would be the town board itself. And that's consistent with the way spending is managed in townships. The voters get to decide the levy, raise it or lower it as they'd like. Once they give it to the board makes those spending decisions.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That answers my question. I didn't want to have put it out there and restrict it so that in case there's something arises, we can do it. So with that, I think this is a good bill. I think it was a good bill the other day.
Very good. Other discussion? Chair Erickson will give you the final word before we move the bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. With the need for food in our food pantries, our food shelves, and the desire of townships to be more involved in that service project, I think this is a good provision to clarify in statute.
Representative Erickson, I will renew my motion that House File 2636 we refer to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, Chair Erickson. You are on your way.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee.
The next bill that we will be taking before the committee is I'm going to ask Representative Christensen to come forward and begin discussion on his bill. They are the engrossment that the copy that we have in our packets today on the Christensen bill is not the most recent engrossment, but my understanding is that it's on its way, so we might be able to get started with the conversation. We get the final engrossment to the bill. We should be good to go. With that, Representative Christensen, welcome to the committee. I'm going to have you talk about the bill, and then when we get the appropriate version, I'll bring it before the committee for before officially before the committee. So with that, welcome to the committee, Representative Christensen. Proceed with the discussion on House File 2846.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill establishes a task force to study special education in Minnesota, how we fund it, and various issues with special education. Since this is the Government Operations Committee, the makeup of it is a task force, and then it also includes a recommendation for a legislative group to be established next legislative session to study and implement the findings of the task force.
Thank you, Representative Christensen. Again, as I had mentioned, we don't have the final engrossment on this, but I do think that we can start with some of the general discussions and, on the merits of the bill until we get the final version. Members, other questions? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe I'm a little confused. I haven't had enough coffee yet, but Representative Christensen, you called this a task force, but in the bill it calls it a working group. And I guess maybe I need to ask Mr. Gehring, what's the difference between the two?
Mr. Gehring, to Representative Nelson's question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, so for purposes of this bill, I don't think there is a difference. So this working group has a specific set of duties that they're being asked to do with an expiration date of 2019. That's consistent with the way we would either call it task force or a working group.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson. Members, other questions? Seeing no other questions, there are two amendments that are in the – oh, I'm sorry, Representative Quam. I didn't see you over there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Christensen. How would this impact in past years? I was the chair of a special education district for several school districts. How would it impact those special education districts? And then what would be the form of communication and involvement that would be available for them?
Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, those organizations have a representative on the working group, and would give feedback that way, as well as certainly there would be a process for testimony and those sorts of things to bring forth concerns from those groups. The idea here is to really bring together stakeholders to talk about how we could improve special education in Minnesota.
Representative Quam, follow up.
Not at this time. Thank
all right.
You.
I do believe that we do have the current engrossment on this. Are there other member questions at this time? Representative Christensen, there were two amendments that were contained in our packet today. Are either of those author amendments that you'll be offering once we do get the most recent engrossment?
Mr. Chair, no.
Okay. With that, we'll give the pages a little bit of time to get that passed out here this morning. I do believe that it has arrived. In the interest of everyone's time, the A6 and the A7 amendment. Who has the A6? Representative Lee has the A6 amendment. Representative Lee, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Christensen, for bringing this forward, too. My A6 amendment will continue the conversation that we had in the Education Policy Committee, just to add the individual from the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs, a representative from a school district in the city of the first class, and a student receiving special education services, and I have talked with Representative Christensen, and we in agreement with the amendment, too.
Representative Christensen, to the A6 amendment offered by Representative Lee. Comments?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Lee, I think this is a good amendment to add more stakeholders to the group.
Right. And again, questions on the amendment? Representative Quam?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Clarification, if we are just now receiving the engrossment, are these, are the amendments that we're going to hear too inaccurate with that engrossment or the copy that we originally had?
Representative Quam, it is my understanding that the A6 and the A7 amendment will work for the engrossed copy that's being distributed right now. Thank you. Other comments on the A6 amendment? Questions? All right, with that, let's go to the A7 amendment, and then we'll give folks a chance to kind of get caught up a little bit on,
Mr. Chair,
on this before we move those. Representative Nelson.
Are we going to do both? Mr. Chair, are we going to vote on it, or are we going to wait till afterwards?
I'm going to wait till make sure everybody gets the engrossment before we go forward. I just want to give the committee ample time. I understand there's minor changes, but I do want people in the committee to have the time to be able to review that. And then once we've got the discussion, then we'll take it, put in the form that the bill author wants, vote on the amendments, and then we will take public testimony at that point once we have it ready to go. Representative Joachim, I saw you raise your hand question, or did you have the A7?
A7.
Representative Joachim to the A7 amendment, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Christensen, for bringing this forward. I don't sit on the Education Committee, so I'm sorry I got to just late yesterday about an amendment. I tried to we couldn't connect, but I did listen to the hearing, and it was a very thoughtful and well-thought-out hearing, a lot of great questions. My concern is that there is nobody on here that's specifically thinking about early childhood, and from my experience as an early childhood advocate and talking to early childhood teachers and working in the field, that really is one of the best ways to actually STEM costs in K through 12. There's some kids that get caught early and get the training and are able to mainstream right into K-12 education. So I thought it was very important to have them be at the table. The amendment is drafted to have up to 3 folks, but I'd be very happy to just even get one on there. So I hope you'll take it into consideration.
Representative Christensen to the A7 amendment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, I think, you know, like I said, kind of the more the merrier to a certain extent. I think it would be best if we had one person from early childhood. I don't know if someone would be willing to offer an oral amendment to change 3 to 1. Just I think that would mesh better with the rest of the group and have a better balance.
Representative Joachim.
Mr. Chair, I would take that as a friendly amendment.
Okay. What we're going to do is we'll continue, and then we'll put the bill in its final order. Mr. Gehring has a couple of other oral amendment corrections, though some literally ands and ofs that need to be revised here. So I will do all of that, and we'll take the oral amendment when we come to the A7 on the most recent engrossment. Members, questions or follow-up on the A7 amendment? Representative Quam, followed by Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And reading the A7, 3 representatives from nonprofit organizations specializing in early childhood education issues, looking at the page 2 and the, more than a dozen already indicated, I would think that ARC, Autism Society of Minnesota, Disability Law Center, Minnesota Alliance with Youth, and the other, half dozen or so, would give a broad enough, exposure. What I'm not seeing is too many school districts, from across the state and a balance there. And I'm just wondering how, adding these 3 nonprofits is going to, assist.
Representative Quam, just to clarify, you cited a couple of the other suggested member groups, and it looks like we have agreement that on the A7 amendment we go to one individual from a nonprofit specializing in early childhood. Is your question on the A7 or on the inclusion of the members that are in the bill itself or the membership in the bill? Representative Quam.
Mr. Chair, on line 1.5 of the A7 amendment it says 3 representatives of nonprofit organizations specializing in early childhood education issues. Mm-hmm. So I'm reading that as being 3. Am I mistaken since you said it would be adding a representative?
Yep, Representative Quam, shortly before we went to additional questions on the A7, when it was offered by Representative Joachim, she offered it as 3 representatives. Representative Christensen, as I recall, said that he believed that adding someone from that group to the working group was good, but he wanted it at 1. Representative Joachim said that she would be okay with that, and I had said we'd hold off on making that oral amendment until we bring the bill before us and bring all of the amendments forward, and we would take that, moving it from 3 down to 1.
Mr. Chair, you mentioned there are multiple oral or multiple minor changes. Would it be appropriate for us to implement those changes so we can have the amendments reread in their final forms?
Well, Representative Quam, we have the A7 amendment. As soon as we're done with questions, that was the exact next thing I was going to do. And so, as far as I know, you're the last individual I had questions. Oh, Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to comment briefly on what Representative Quam said. While a lot of these organizations do touch on early childhood, They by no means are more comprehensively just looking at early childhood education. And I think that would be very beneficial for the working group since, like I said before, there is a lot of statistics showing that if we catch kids early and give them the help that they need, it actually saves money in K through 12. And it seems like this working group has a bent on trying to figure out how to cut costs. So I thought it would be a good addition.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. Other discussion to the A7? I'm sorry, Representative Freiberg. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to say it seems like a good idea. I have a child who is in early childhood education and has an IEP, and there are distinct considerations with that, so I think this is a good amendment.
Very good. With that, I am going to move officially before the committee House File 2846, which was the engrossment that we had just received, and have that be with the recommendation be re-referred to the Education Finance Committee. And with that, we had the A6 amendment, which was the Representative Lee amendment. And Representative Christensen, if you will, for the committee's benefit again, remind us what your wishes are on the A6 amendment offered by Representative Lee.
Mr. Chair, members, I think it's a good amendment and to add a valuable insight to the working group.
All those in favor of the A6 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The A6 amendment is adopted. Now to the A7 amendment, which was the Joachim amendment. And Representative Christensen, if you will, for the benefit of the committee, remind us what your intentions are for the A7 amendment.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe Representative Joachim or another member will be offering an oral amendment to change it to one representative from early childhood organizations, and I think that's a good addition to the working group.
Representative Joachim, it is your amendment, the A7. Did you want to offer that change if you're in agreement with that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like to change on lines 1.5, the 3 to 1, and the amendment is drafted to the first engrossment.
Very good. To the A7 amendment, Representative Joachim offers an oral amendment to strike the number 3 as written and... Well, Mr. Gehring, hang on. Representative Joachim, Mr. Gehring has
just noticed the plural. Sorry about that, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Mr. Gehring is going to have some clarity to help us with the grammatics on that. So, Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, what I would suggest is on line 1.5 of the amendment, delete the phrase three representatives of nonprofit organizations and insert one representative of a nonprofit organization.
So going from the plural to the singular form in all references in that. So once again, Representative Joachim, what Mr. Gehring is offering on the A7 to accomplish what you and Representative Christensen have worked out is striking the words three representatives of nonprofit organizations and insert one, O-N-E, representative, singular, of a nonprofit organization, singular. Representative Joachim, is that what you were thinking?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like to move that oral amendment.
All right. Questions to the oral amendment? Hearing none and seeing none, all those in favor of the oral amendment that's offered by Representative Joachim signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The oral amendment is adopted. Now to the A7 amendment to House File 2846. Representative Christensen, I assume that this is now in the order that's acceptable?
Mr. Chair, yes.
And all those in favor of the A7 amendment as amended to be adopted to House File 2846 signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, the motion carries. The final grammatics that I am aware of on the bill, I'm once again going to refer to Mr. Gehring for his suggestions because he was the one who had identified these. And they're less technical than the ones we just went through, I can assure you of that. Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, so these are two drafting corrections for the bill. On line 2.24 of the first engrossment, delete the word and so that we're correctly referencing the Minnesota Education Equity Partnership. And then line 2.28, after Commissioner, insert of Education to clarify that this is the Commissioner of Education making the appointments.
Representative Christensen, did you follow that, or would you like a copy of Mr. Gehring's suggestions?
Mr. Chair, I followed.
Okay. Members, questions to the grammatical changes? Representative Mason.
I have a question about the committee for this amendment.
Okay. Well, we're going to take care of this amendment. We'll be right back to you, Representative Mason. other questions on the amendments, then I will offer the oral amendments to lines 2.24, deleting the word and between the words education and equity, which will now read the Minnesota Education Equity Partnership, and on line 2.28, by June 1st of 2018, the commissioner add the words of education as the oral amendment. All those in favor of the oral amendment to House File 2846 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The bill is now in the order that the author would like it. Representative Mason, to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize, I may have missed this in the earlier part of the discussion, but the purpose of the group is to make recommendations to reduce costs, not to make the programs more efficient, not to make them work better, just to reduce costs. And that, I have a problem with that. I mean, we're trying to get the best educated workforce in the world. This, the overall mission of this seems really questionable.
Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, that's not the exclusive purpose of the working group. That is a purpose of the working group, and I think most folks would agree that if we're able to use our dollars more efficiently, that provides better results for students.
Representative Mason, follow-up.
I guess I disagree with you, but I'll let it go. Hopefully other people will pay attention to this later on. Thank you.
Yep. Representative Freiberg, followed by Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not on the Education Committee, so I wasn't around for the first discussion of this. I guess it's great to have another working group look at an issue in depth, but, you know, I was at the AMSD meeting at the right before session started, and they identified one of their priorities as funding the cross-subsidy, and I certainly think that's an important goal. I have a child with an IEP, so I've in the last year, I've developed some personal experience with the special education system, and I certainly think it needs all the resources it can get. So I guess I'm just wondering, are there plans afoot to actually fully fund special education and fund the cross-subsidy?
Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Freiberg, that's, you know, what one of these things that the working group is talking about is how best to establish is how best to fund special education. And I think we've heard from a variety of school districts different ideas of how to fund special education. Some folks, you know, want just us to put more money on the formula instead of exclusively dedicating it to special education. Some, want to establish a line item mechanism of funding for specifically special education. And how to do that most effectively, I think, is definitely one of the things this working group is looking at.
Representative Freiberg, follow-up.
No.
Okay. Representative Joachim, followed by Representative Kwan. Representative Sandstedt, I'll put you on the list as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, like I said before, I'm not on the Education Committee, but I did listen to the hearing. And I do still have some concerns with lines 1.13 through 1.15. You mentioned identifying disparities in student identification. Representative Christensen, are there specific disparities that you're seeing that you would like identified? Or I guess I'm just wondering where that's coming from.
Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, I missed the first half of your question, but I think your question was about disparities in identification of students. And some of those situations are we're seeing a disparity in racial makeup of students that are identified and over-identifying or under-identifying students, and that's one of the things the working group would look at.
Representative Joachim. Follow-up? Okay. Representative Kwan, followed by Representative Sandstedt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And during the years I was on the governing board for a special education district, it was always frustrating, the funding and the different hoops that were for federal and state. But even more frustrating was when we had to waste money because of things that were, you know, the law needs to be compatible and offer options so that you can fit the individuals. Because each of these students is an individual. They've got different combinations of training and assistance and programs. And too often we have the one size fits all. Oh, gee, it works good here. So it should work good everywhere. And frankly, I think what can come out of this is some intelligence that will say there are multiple ways that you can deliver depending on what students you have, the composition of your population, and allow that flexibility so we can do it, because it was, you know, besides chairing it for a while, I was the treasurer on that board. And you think things are complex. This is one of the more complex areas of the education funding and finance. And because of, you know, supporting that diversity and that one size doesn't fit all, I wonder if staff can tell me where on here there's any guarantee that any of the people representing here will live in a school district outside the metro counties.
I guess, you know, is there a specific person that you'd like to answer that question, the bill author? You said he's staff person.
I assume staff might have, again, I was reviewing the actual, you know, language of the bill after it was passed out during the committee.
I will go to Mr. Gehring in just a moment, but I will draw your attention, Representative Quam, to line 2.18. There is a Greater Minnesota organization that is specifically called out to be on here, and I would say I would guess that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the only Greater Minnesota group that would be on there, but to answer your question, that's a start to that. Mr. Gehring?
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, I don't have anything else to add. That there's no specific language in here about where the people who are appointed must be located. That's an issue for the committee to decide.
Mr. Chair,
Quam.
You know, I did notice that there was one location out of it. It appears that there are, you know, with the amendments, close to two dozen members, and only one is Minnesota Rural Education Association. And since we received this language, you know, this engrossment during committee, I would like to amend and add that one-third of the membership of this committee reside in a school district outside the metro counties, which is a fairly standard approach to try and ensure some geographic. Because even though the association makes a recommendation for appointment, that doesn't guarantee that that person isn't from one of the metro counties.
Representative Quam, a couple of things. Number one, the engrossed version wasn't that dissimilar to the one that was in people's packets, and I do believe that online the correct version was posted. And the committee does have a 24-hour deadline, so to bring an oral amendment at this point, that's more than an oral amendment to something that's already before us, is probably outside of the boundaries of what the committee is able to do at this point.
Mr. Chair, at what time was it posted online? Was that beyond the 24 hours, and how much beyond?
Representative Quam, the procedures for posting bills and amendments has been followed for this committee and for this particular bill, so that would have been posted well in advance of the time, probably as recent as last week, for our postings on that. So,
well, I accept that, and we'll vigorously at every point try to ensure that we don't have another body generated in government that is just preeminently from one section of the state.
And I would encourage you to work with the author with your concerns. Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to say thank you for putting this together, this bill, and looking at special education. Having left the classroom just over 2 weeks ago, this is a very, very relevant issue. And it's one that our public schools are facing, our charter schools. And for the committee and members in here, there's a tidal wave coming our way. And I'm saying that from firsthand experience. And while I think it's a noble reason to look at trying to reduce costs and be responsible, I think we might be cutting off our knees, you know, cutting ourselves off at our knees if we are specifically, and I know there's more to it, but if we state that we're going to just specifically reduce costs forthcoming in special education, seeing what we have coming our way. I know it's a Hail Mary, but I'm going to go out and ask the author to consider an oral amendment in line 1.8 to add the words after the word costs, if warranted. So all I'm asking is that the work be done, the report be made. But if your findings are that maybe it isn't in the best interest to specifically reduce costs, that we are willing to acknowledge that too. I don't want our students today or in the future to not receive services need because this body said we're trying to be fiscally responsible. I think we have to be fiscally responsible, but we also have to take into account what's coming. So before we just make the decision we have to reduce costs, I say let's see what the evidence shows.
Representative Stanstead, could you once again repeat what you're suggesting here?
My Hail Mary is line 1.8 would read, recommending changes to reduced costs if warranted.
Members, just a general comment. We do have these bills and the opportunity to have amendments posted, and it seems like we're getting kind of deep into the weeds, if I can use that term, about wanting to rewrite the bill when we do have the amendment process on here. Representative Christensen, do you have guidance for the committee as to what you'd like to see done in that particular area?
Mr. Chair, I think, you know, as far as amendments is you know, the committee's in your decision. I think as far as your concerns about the bill, I think the language in not so many words says what your intent is. I don't interpret the bill, at least, as saying come up with a plan to reduce costs in net on special education. But I think in any program, you know, there's going to be ways to increase efficiencies and find ways to be more effective. I don't think that's saying that we should be cutting special education. I think that's saying let's be more efficient and make our dollars go further and be able to do more with our funding that we allocate to special education.
Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I absolutely believe that is your intent, but the language, the way it reads, says the purpose of this bill would be to reduce costs. That is the charge. And 2 years down the road, there could be a completely different body sitting here who will go back and look at a report that is charged with reducing costs. That is the goal. And I am so genuinely concerned about what our public schools are facing, what is coming down the pike, like something we have never seen before in the world of education, and I'm going to go on record and state that. I think it's going to look completely different than anything we've ever seen, and I just cannot urge enough caution, respectfully. I think we're making a mistake by saying we are going to reduce costs. Looking at it, absolutely. Being fiscally responsible, absolutely. But specifically to another body who's going to have to go back and look at our work, it has to be crystal clear so the kids aren't the ones that pay.
Representative Sandstead and Representative Christensen, this is a policy committee, and I know that a number of representatives has raised finance questions as it relates to, and you're being the most recent on cost, and Representative Freiberg was asking about what funding and how the cross-funding be. My suggestion is, since this is going to a finance committee with education, that that's maybe the place that conversation is more appropriate. I would encourage Representative Christensen and Representative Sandstedt to continue this discussion as that they maybe can work out those details before we get to the Finance Committee on that finance-related question. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do want to respect what you're saying because you're right. We should have the finance discussion in the finance committees. But I believe that this really is a policy discussion that we're having here, because when we create these working groups, we're giving them very specific charges and what they need to do. And this is drafted to say we want to find how to cut costs. Now, I have been doing advocacy work for about 14 years in education, and back 14 years ago we were talking about the cross subsidy, and those have ballooned for districts. You have districts that have 5 to 10% of their budget being taken away by cross subsidy that they could be spending somewhere else. I trust our local government control. I was on a city council. I think those school boards, being responsible school boards, if they could have found cost savings, they would have. They are facing an epidemic when it is coming to this. And we need to be very careful when we craft these working group and the charges that we're asking for, that they have the leeway to come back and give us really good information. Representative Christensen put together a really great working group that has a wide swath of folks that are going to give us some really good input. Let's give them the leeway to be able to give us the information to make the best decision. And I think having it just focus on cutting costs isn't what we need at this point in time. That might have been a discussion for 10 or 15 years ago, but we're way past that now. So I hope Representative Christensen will consider adding this policy provision on how we're charging the working group.
Representative Peterson, followed by Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Christensen, for bringing this forward. And as you two have alluded to, you know, I think that the idea behind this working group is to really look at everything, because special education has been taking up and has been growing in the budget that how education is funded. But, you know, just maybe if it would help, maybe look at some of the administrative costs, because I know administrative costs have really gone up a lot, so that might be a suggestion that Representative Christensen can look at. And to remember that special education is governed under federal law, but Minnesota has other laws that are also over and above the federal law, and that's where it, maybe this working group might have an opportunity to look at some of those things. So I just want to thank Representative Christensen for bringing this forward. This is something that I know many of the school organizations have been, is one of their number one priorities, and I know that it doesn't hurt to look at everything regardless of whatever, but this is a very important move forward. Thank you.
I have one last member on the list at this point, Representative Nelson, and then I will open to public testimony. If you'd like to testify on the matter, Santa, our page is here, and she can go ahead and get you lined up and queued up on that. Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I realize that we're not a finance committee, but we're not talking – when we're talking about reducing costs and the charge that we're giving this working group, we're not talking about finance. We're talking about what we're telling this group to do. It's not about the dollars that we're putting in education. So I think that the discussion we're having here, and I know Representative Christensen is listening and may make some tweaks on this going forward, but when we tell a group that you need to look at how to cut costs, I can cut costs when I buy tires for my car by buying used tires that are bald, and that'll cut costs, but my car will end up in the ditch. We're telling this group that to look at reducing costs and nothing else, and they may look at a whole plethora of other things, and that may be the intent, and it sounds like that's what the intent of the author is. But when we put it in statute that they're going to look at reducing costs and bring a report back to the legislature about how we can reduce costs, that's all we're asking them to do. We're not asking them for how we can make this program, these programs better, what we can do to make them work more efficiently. We're just asking them how to reduce costs. And there's a lot of ways to reduce costs that aren't going to make the program better and aren't going to make it better for our school districts and our students. But that's all we're asking them to look at. They can come back with a report and say, well, we'll just put less teachers on and have each one of those teachers teach more students. That's a way of reducing costs, because that's the big cost driver in government and in education, is the teachers, is the individuals that are there that you're paying. And if we get rid of the teachers, we're not going to have any good results.
Thank you. Representative Sandstead, then you do need to hear from the public today as well, and it does look like we have a number of testifiers. And members, just for your information, we are scheduled now at 7 o'clock tonight for room 10, given our agenda and the amount of stuff we have to get through. So with that, Representative Sandstead.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and to the author. Again, I do feel this is very much a policy issue. All I'm asking is for you to consider, if warranted. I think it clarifies what you're really trying to do. I think by not doing that, the ramifications are going to be significant to students, but also to our school districts who are going to have to choose between no good choices. And it's already a problem in our public schools. Duluth Public Schools just had a huge issue over this exact situation. And I want to make sure that the work we're doing here isn't further restrictive to our districts, to our students. So, again, I'm just going to ask you to consider that.
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Christensen, I guess when I read the House research and I look under Subdivision 1 duties, it requires, I guess when I read that, I'm thinking more of the burden than it is the cost. To me, when I read this, it says they need to look at what is requested of the program and what burdens can we get rid of, because that's the thing I hear most from my school district being a regional center. Isn't so much, you know, it's just the burdens of all the paperwork. It's the burdens of all that. They're losing folks working in that field because of the requests upon them. So when I read that, I'm thinking of, you know, it's taken away some of the burdens that we put upon this. So I would like Representative Christensen to keep that in mind as well. I think that maybe there's maybe a little tweaking to the language, but I do think you're on the right path.
Representative Christensen, I am going to ask you to weigh in on this, knowing that it is your bill and it is going to an Education Finance Committee, and we do need to move our agenda along. So I'm going to ask what your wishes are at this point as the author.
Mr. Chair and members, I think, you know, these are issues, and I want to respect that your process and your, you know, amendment deadline, so I'd be happy to work with members going forward. This has another stop in education finance where I think these amendments would be appropriate.
And Representative Christensen, I know that you do want the best outcome, as the other members of this committee have talked about, and when we get into making a series of oral amendments, we do run the risk of some unintended consequences. So I'm going to ask, as the chair, to the extent that I have the authority, to charge you and Representative Sandstead to get together to find appropriate language and to take her concerns to the next committee stop with this, because there are valid concerns, I think, that have been raised today. But I don't want to have any other unintended consequences with the bill and by on the fly doing some things. So with that, members of the public, Mr. Heller, I think you have checked in. If you would like to come down and testify today, and if there are others, we'll ask you to get queued up here as well. Good morning and welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I think this bill has been discussed thoroughly, so I will be very brief. I'm Denise Dietrich with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I am here on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association, MASBO, the Business Officers School Districts, the Metropolitan School Districts, and the superintendents, and we all strongly support this bill. And just to give you a little bit of evidence as to that, we have school boards across the state right now that are passing a resolution that says form some sort of a work group task force that would study the issue of special education. And over 170 school districts right now as we speak have passed that type of resolution at their board tables. And I would just like to speak to two things. This is a fiscal issue. The cross subsidy for 2016 is $679 million, and it is growing, and that's a 5.6 increase over the previous year. So this is a fiscal year. This It's a fiscal issue. This work group needs to take the fiscal side to it, too. But since you are the State Government Finance Committee, I also wanted to make sure that you understand that this is not the first time this issue has been studied. We have had we have had audit reports. We have had other work groups that have looked at some of the other type policy issues, and they are really just those recommendations really sit on the shelf. But we thought it was timely to have another work group because the MDE implemented a new special education formula, and so school districts are just feeling the impact of that. So we think it is really important to have a work group that looks at the whole spectrum of special education from the fiscal side to the policy side, but with the goal of coming up with a 10-year plan on how to reduce the special education cross-subsidy and what other things can we do to help reduce costs. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I will conclude. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dietrich. Mr. Heller? If there's anyone else who would like to testify, please make your way toward the testifying table, and we'll get you in. Good morning, Mr. Heller. If you'll identify yourself for the record and who you represent, proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll and Operations Government Operations Election Policy Committee, speaking today on the March 5th, today, is that correct? 6th, anyways. My name is Rick Heller, an official representative of Twice Exceptional People with Print Disabilities. Come to testify on House File 2846. I support it. However, it lacks substance. I spoke in the prior committee, Education Policy, and I cited the Minnesota report to the legislature dated January 22nd called Special Education Assistive Technology. If people have digital ones, they can look it up. What I say is accurate, obviously, otherwise I'm out of here. There's a few key words that really stand out specifically on page 9, 10, 29, 34, and 52 of that document. It's called selection, acquisition, and use. I believe that's policy. In fact, the State Department is currently in invested partnership with 5 other states regarding access to instructional materials. They're here to testify. They want to yield any questions, obviously, to the chair. That would be an important piece as we move ahead of substance as it relates to universal design for learning. In 2009, there was a bill that came up, and House File 2 failed. Universal design for learning is for now everybody. 2 years ago, they reset it at MIT or Harvard, called now Access Education Materials.cast, which is the Center for Applied Special Technology.org. Universal design needs to be in this because it was first for special ed in 1984 when they took up federal funding. And now, 2 years ago, they reset it. They took new federal funding. Now it's for everybody. Needs to be in all classrooms. Unless you include that in this bill regarding substance, again, universal design for learning, and then selection, acquisition, and use. And last but least, page 14.
Mr. Heller, I'm not sure if you're testifying on the right bill today because there isn't a page 14 and some of the other page references that you cited.
I'm quoting from the Special Education Assistive Technology.
Mr. Heller, please. If there's a three-page bill, and I just want to make sure you have the right document, it's H2846-1 is the bill that's before us as amended. And there's a three-page document, and there's the three or the two and the dots that follow. So I just want to make sure that you've got the right bill that you're testifying on here with us today.
Just for clarification, this bill is about the committee, correct? Special Education Committee?
Mr. Heller, this bill is having to do with an education working group related to special education. Mm-hmm. However, you're citing stuff in another document, perhaps, because you're talking about a page 14, where there's only three pages that are on this particular bill, including the two amendments, which would, in essence, make it to a five-page document if you looked at those amendments.
I heard the amendments, sir, and thank you for pointing that out. I brought this up in education policy. Nobody has stepped forward here. You are the leaders. I dropped the seeds. You can put them in the bill so people can water them. I'm going to say again, it's essential that you look at universal design for learning If you allow the question for the State Department to come up here and ask, have them answer that question, how essential that is, then you would know that. So if you would allow them to come up and answer that question, you could be more productive with representatives working with Mr. Christensen regarding the language that's missing in this important bill. Because right now the big shift is going on with special education. I believe one of the reasons they did not fund it or underfunded it is because now universal design for learning is for every student, not just for special ed, started in 1984. Because the system technology has gone far enough now, and what the State Department, which I will stop from quoting from on page 14 under item 4, what the State Department is currently working with other states regarding accessing materials for people with print disabilities and blindness, because we currently have three academies, the blind, deaf, blind, and the purpose, and they have to follow it. But because school districts do not have to follow Minnesota Statute 16E.03 subdivision 9, they only do 504. We all need to do 508 refresh. Look it up, everybody. Do your homework. I know you're respectful. You will look that up diligently, and you will consider my proposals. I'm not here to put any words in the language, but to drop the seeds for you guys to make sure that if you're going to look effectively, because you heard before, there's many reports that look at special education, but they can't seem to wrap their hands about the functionality, how it's underfunded, but frankly, the shift is going on. Special education funding was never meant to be fully funded, even though it was promised at 60%, I believe, by the federal government, okay? So if that's the fact, and now it's for everybody, then why are we looking at the cross-subsidies issues? Because it's supposed to be in every classroom. The reason that got on House File 2, because I said the Minnesota University is the only place in the country that works at universal design principles for assessments. Where is it in the classroom? It nearly became law, but House File 2 failed. Once again, look it up. Do your diligence. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. And I'm going to ask Representative Christensen as well as the task force, as if it does move forward, and working group, to consider some of the things that Mr. Heller has brought forward to us. Thank you for your testimony today, sir. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House File 2846 as amended? Seeing none and hearing none, Representative Christensen, we will give you the final word on House File 2846 as amended.
Mr. Chair, members, thanks for the hearing.
I will renew my motion that House File 2846 as amended be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion carries. Representative Christensen, you are on your way.
Thank you.
Representative Runbeck, Chair Runbeck, you will have the next bill, which is House File 3013. Members, that is in your packet as well. House File 3013. Representative Runbeck, welcome to the committee, and I will move House File 3013 before the committee to be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance. With that, Chair Runbeck, if you'll proceed with your testimony and on the bill.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And your foregoing conversation, I think, leads a perfect segue into this bill. House File 3013 regards dyslexia and the next step, really, in making certain that our school systems are ready to intervene when children are suffering that disability of not being able to learn quickly and to get that first phase of learning under their belt. So, and we know that 17% of learners are suffering from some form of dyslexia. And I've got great testifiers. I'll probably let them just explain all of that. But our one-size-fits-all system, we've fallen into that. And it's reading is somewhat of a customized learning experience, and we need to be able to have teachers who can identify the symptoms and at least know how to direct parents into a proper intervention. I have with me folks who have worked very hard with decoding dyslexia. It's a state organization, a lot of parents, a lot of professionals who have experienced all of this in their families. So I'll introduce Rachel Berger, and she can explain from here. So.
Good morning and welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Rachel Berger, lead for Decoding Dyslexia Minnesota. For those of you that haven't had the opportunity to meet us yet, we're a grassroots organization, as Representative Runbeck said, made up of parents, educators, and other professionals working to advocate for students who struggle with dyslexia in our public schools. For the past 5 years, we've received a tremendous amount of support, bipartisan, from members of your committee and others. And this year, we're here to discuss the professional development needs of our educators. Whether identified or not, the National Institute of Child and Human Development states that 17 to 20% of our population struggles with dyslexia. Yet according to 2017 MCA data, 43% of our students are leaving third grade, not reading at grade level. I don't believe that all of those students are dyslexic, but given the former data point, I think it's fair to say that a portion of those kids are struggling with dyslexia. In the past number of years, committee members have heard stories from parents across the state who are struggling to receive an equitable education for their students who have dyslexia in a setting that wasn't prepared to meet their needs. Many parents, those that are fortunate enough, step outside the school to serve their dyslexic students with the effective interventions known to remediate dyslexia. That comes at a significant financial burden to families, in which creates further inequity among our students. Only those with the resources will access the help they need. But students aren't the only ones experiencing inequity issues in education. The same inequity is happening among our educators. They're simply not being provided the tools to help all of our students learn to read. Only those with the resources and the knowledge will access the training they need. We conducted a statewide survey this past month and learned that within our teacher prep programs, 91% of teachers with a bachelor's degree could not define dyslexia, its symptoms, and of those, 97% were not adequately prepared to teach a student with dyslexia to read. When asking teachers with a master's or a doctorate degree, 92% said they were not able to define dyslexia, its symptoms, or teach those students how to read. 51% of teachers surveyed said dyslexia was never mentioned in their coursework. These numbers matter because 69% of those surveys received an education-related master's or doctorate from a Minnesota college or university. And we know that this is important because 48% of teachers surveyed said they spent their own money and time to train themselves how to teach these students. Back to 17 to 20% of our population who struggle with dyslexia, this breaks down to approximately 4 to 5 students in every classroom. Yet when it comes to teacher prep or in-service development, there's a gap in the tools and resources provided to our educators. They are not being provided any instruction on the disability that affects 1 in 5 students' ability to read printed word, and this leaves our educators feeling inadequately prepared, frustrated, and responsible. To illustrate my point, I want to share with you the concerns of a mother who called me last week. She had a second grader who was identified in kindergarten as a struggling reader due to her lack of letter recognition and pre-literacy skills. Her child had been receiving intervention since kindergarten, and after 2 3/4 years of intervention, this child is still reading at a kindergarten level. The mother explained that her child is now anxious, upset, and lost self-confidence. The teacher is equally frustrated with the multiple frequent mistakes the student is making and asks the child to work harder. As concerning as this is, the mother was more concerned because she's been informed that the instructor will no longer provide the interventions. The instructor said they're not working. It's too frustrated to work with a child who continues to make mistakes. The thing is, this isn't an effort issue. This isn't an educator or teacher blame issue. This is a dyslexia issue. The teacher clearly desired to help her student. However, she wasn't given the tools to recognize the child's dyslexia, and the lack of awareness has cost the student and the teacher 2 years. This is an issue of inequitable resources. In 2016, in collaboration with Education Minnesota, we conducted a survey and learned that 75% of teachers have not received an in-service training on educating students with dyslexia. 96% said they've got experience working with students who are unresponsive to intervention, and 94% were interested in receiving an in-service on dyslexia. House File 3013 would begin to provide educators with the tools to understand what dyslexia looks like in the classroom, supports, accommodations, and resources available to educators within the district and state. With the increased focus on Read Well by third grade and increased pressure on our educators to ensure the outcomes in ESSA, we need to focus on long-term solutions to provide our educators with the tools and skills to achieve the outcomes we desire.
Thank you. Did you also want to testify this morning, ma'am?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Please go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rachel Decla, and I'm the mother of five young children, two with dyslexia. I'm also a school board director at Delano Public Schools. Although I'm not here to speak on behalf of the school I represent, I am here to share with you some of the knowledge I've gained. As an elected official, I find that much of my time, like yours, is spent around two issues, funding and equity. When preparing my remarks for today, I kept coming back to these two central themes. How can we relieve some of the funding issues that our schools face, and how do we make education equitable for all of our students? The answer, I believe, is in the most valuable resource our schools have to offer. It's teachers. To illustrate my point, I want to share with you the stories of two different students in the exact same school district. The first, my son Isaiah, spent all of kindergarten struggling to learn. Isaiah's teacher initially wasn't concerned, but as the year went on, she grew increasingly more concerned. Isaiah left kindergarten not able to spell his own name, not able to identify letters or their sounds, and he certainly wasn't reading. Isaiah had a great teacher, but neither his teacher nor us knew it was dyslexia until someone outside of the school district told us that that was probably the path he was on. Isaiah's educational path will continue to be an uphill battle. The second story is about my daughter, Anna Marie, a kindergartner this year. Immediately, we started seeing the same signs and symptoms we saw in Isaiah. At the start of kindergarten, she was tested by an outside doctor, and she, too, is dyslexic. By simply being able to identify her dyslexia, we were able to meet with her teachers and tell them the type of instruction she would need to be successful. Anna Marie will leave kindergarten behind, but miles ahead of where Isaiah left kindergarten, even though they should have had access to the exact same remediations as a kindergartner. This is exactly the type of situation where I believe that House File 3013 takes a stride in the direction of relieving some of the funding issues as well as the equity issues in our public schools. Had Isaiah's teacher been given training on the identification of dyslexia, Isaiah would have been enrolled for effective remediation as a kindergartner. I want to be clear, this is not about teacher bashing. You would be hard-pressed to find a better teacher than my son had in kindergarten. She had the patience, the dedication, and the desire to teach him. She was everything a parent hopes for when sending their kid to school, but she didn't have access to training to identify what was wrong with my son. How many students go through these ineffective interventions, wasting school resources like my son Isaiah did, simply because no one there knows the signs of dyslexia? How many children with dyslexia are now in special education because they simply fell too far behind? I would argue that the time and money spent in educating our teachers on the signs and traits of dyslexia will ultimately be a cost-saving endeavor. It would allow our teachers to identify dyslexia and help students early and effectively, in many cases before the need for special education even arises. This leads to equity. In helping teachers learn how to identify and understand dyslexia, we are opening the door to equitable opportunities for all of our students. Every student has the right to learn to read. However, for a dyslexic student, this is often a luxury only afforded to those whose parents can afford the testing and the remediation. Giving teachers the ability to identify dyslexia is a big step towards equitable outcomes for all students with dyslexia in the public school system.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, before I go to member questions, you did receive an updated bill with the first engrossment, and as committees were working, processing yesterday, we did have the early out with the weather, so I think that there were a few things that had been photocopied and put in the packets that we received here versus what was online. So if you want to take a few moments to review 3013, if you have some questions, I'm certainly willing to let the author have some conversation and discussion on that. But I think that we ended up getting a little bit behind because of the weather yesterday and getting materials with the updates coming from the other committees. Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Scheer. And I'm just going to say, looking at this bill, it's a good bill, and I support it. I think we should move forward with this. Next-door neighbor I had growing up had dyslexia, and they didn't catch it till a teacher caught it when he was a junior in high school. And as he was getting into junior high, he was a very smart kid because he was keeping up, but he started getting behind and started causing problems. And it was when they diagnosed that he had dyslexia that he was able to finally move on and graduate on time. So I think this is a good bill, and I think we should vote all support it.
With that, Representative Rembert, did you have other witnesses and testifiers today that you... I see someone's joined here. I don't know if he's a phone
Mr.
a friend
Chair,
or if he's somebody that you needed to have testify
today
as well.
I know that you're hearing here today is because of the rules. So I don't know. We do have, and the really great thing is that the Department of Education has added a dyslexia specialist to their staff, and she's here. So if there are questions, you know, technically about where this is going to go and so on, she would be able to testify to that. Otherwise, I do have one additional individual just to, with a personal testimony.
Sure, let's take that, and then I do have three or four member questions that are on here as well. So with that, sir, if you'll introduce yourself for the record and share your testimony with the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Kevin Donovan, and I'm here to share my own personal journey with the learning difference. I am currently on the Matamidi School Board. I'm not here for... representing Matamidi School Board. I'm here to represent the students of Minnesota. I've served on the school board for 12 years, and I'm the past president of the Minnesota School Board Association, currently the chair of the Minnesota School Boards Association Insurance Trust. I have served on many nonprofit boards and have been very successful in my career. Thank you for listening to my personal journey. I also have a learning difference. Mine is in spelling. I have known ever since I was a little boy that I had a great deal of difficulty in spelling words. In fact, my spelling ability is so bad, even a dictionary doesn't work. Imagine looking up cucumber in the Q section of the dictionary. I have vivid memories of my past public school experience. In seventh grade at Ramsey Junior High, in St. Paul, my teacher, Mrs. Poltusker, who was maybe a bit frustrated with my inability to spell, would have me go up to the chalkboard and spell the word necessary. This I could not do, and I was shamed to the point of shutting down and turning away from writing because I thought I wasn't smart enough. I don't think my experience 50 years ago was unique. Teachers just didn't know. That is why I support this bill. The vast majority of teachers do not understand learning difference dyslexia. Let's give teachers the tools to help all of our students learn. I am the current development director for the Matamidi Area Education Foundation. My serendipitous, and yes, I had to look that up, my serendipitous connection to dyslexia came 2 years ago as our school foundation funded a grant to allow our elementary reading specialist, Judy Livingston, to attend a national conference on dyslexia. Judy came back excited from the event and eager to apply what she had learned to her students. We have our grant recipients report to the school board. This is where I first discovered I might have dyslexia. You see, Judy shared that dyslexics have above average intelligence. This learning difference has a genetic component. At 58, sitting in my school board chair, I discovered that my spelling difficulties had a name. For full disclosure, my mother was the 1946 Ohio spelling champion. Yes, DNA works in mysterious ways. I was very fortunate that I had a very strong and supportive family and a great college teacher that put inner voice before syntax and spelling. I realize now that there are some really great workarounds, as my friend Siri, spell necessary. Through my connection with Rachel Berger and the work of Judy Livingston, I have learned about my dyslexia and the research that has been done on identification, remediation, and supports. There is so much we can do for our educators and students if we come together on the topic of literacy for all. House File 3013 will support and provide guidance to teachers that are eager to receive training on learning difference dyslexia. From my MSBA role, I am, as a rule, leery of unfunded mandates. However, this bill provides such a direct impact to student learning that I strongly encourage inclusion in the education omnibus bill. We can develop a train-the-trainer model that can be done for all 332 districts across the state. partnerships with higher ed institutions could allow us to do this relicensure for a minimal cost during teacher and service days. My hope is for all our 847,000 students to have trained teachers who know how to identify and provide the necessary support for the 20% of students that have learning differences. My hope is for the future that no one will have to wait until 58 years old listening to a report in a school board chair to discover their learning difference. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony. With that, I have Representatives Bliss, Sandsted, Joachim, and now Mason on the list. And again, we are probably going to be meeting later tonight, so adjust your schedules accordingly to that. Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of brief comments. Thank you for bringing this forward. I, too, had a family member who with dyslexia, and he was labeled as slow growing up, and I believe it was in his junior year, somewhere around there. They identified it and helped him. My another quick point is my wife is a first-grade school teacher, and she has been witnessing this, and I don't believe she was fully aware of what dyslexia was. With my family history, I showed her some literature, and she has been trying to teach herself how to deal with it. So this is going to help her greatly. So I really appreciate the bill. Thank you.
Representative Sandsted, followed by Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a great bill, and I want to applaud you and your efforts on this. Just a couple of things going forward. I'm wondering if you think that some of this training could be delivered online. That's my first question, just to make sure it's high quality and that educators are hearing basically the same thing, that there's uniformity in our training. And the other question is, if this becomes a mandate, something that teachers are required to do as they renew licenses, just to the committee, that we don't have another unfunded mandate. I know that the money is not the discussion we're having here, but as we move forward, it should be considered so it's not another hardship placed on a school because it is so relevant.
Representative Sands, if you could repeat your first question, we'll see who's going to take that one.
Is it possible to have online training? Is it something you think would be delivered or could be delivered in a meaningful way?
It is. It is possible to have online training. There are modules available currently with different organizations that serve the dyslexic population. I think this is a really good question for Dr. Schulting, our dyslexia specialist. But I do know of online training available in different modules. And to your second question, you were concerned about the content and that with the same message was received in all the different variable ways that teachers could receive the training?
I just want to make sure that...
Representative Sandsted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just that there's uniformity that all teachers across the state are receiving high-quality professional development.
Mr. Chair.
Proceed.
The intent of the language to include guidance from the Department of Education dyslexia specialist was to ensure that.
And to the second question, teacher licensure and renewal?
It was just to encourage. It's not really a question. It's just to encourage as this bill moves forward that we are conscientious about if it becomes a mandate, a part required for relicensure, and if the districts are required to provide that we provide a funding stream for the districts to do that.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Reinbeck.
Right. I think your suggestions are very good, and as Rachel said, we do have the specialist in the audience, so I'm sure she's taking notes.
And with that, Representative Joachim, followed by Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and mine's quick. I just want to say thank you so much. I think this is a great start and really important, especially seeing some of the testimonies from the teacher in your support letter. The only question I have is, why just Tier 3 and 4?
Representative Rumbeck, is that to you or to your testifiers? Or?
I think we have some experts, Mr. Chair, that are in the audience.
But they'll make their way down to provide information for the
Dr.
committee.
Dr. Schlichting, would you want to just say hello and give a comment?
And I have Representative Joachim right now with her question, then I have Representative Mason. If there's anyone from the public that would like to speak, we'll ask you to check in with the page, Santa, and she will get you on the list. Good morning and welcome to the committee. If we identify your name and then proceed with Representative Sandsted's question, if you need to, we'll have her repeat it for you. Okay. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee,
I'd like to start with some initial comments, if that's okay. Thank you.
So, and for my correction, it wasn't Sam's, that it was you, Akeem's question, for the record. Please proceed.
So my name is Dr. Amy Schulting, and I'm honored to speak with you today about dyslexia. I'll provide a brief overview of my background. I'm a former classroom teacher with a master's degree in education and a PhD in clinical psychology. I'm a child psychologist with prior experience diagnosing dyslexia in private practice and tutoring students with dyslexia. I also have experience as a researcher at Duke University, where I conducted education policy research. I'm also the proud mother of three boys with dyslexia who have taught me a tremendous amount. Today, I'm also honored to be here as the dyslexia specialist at MDE, thanks to legislation that was passed last year to create this position. So I'm very grateful to be here. As the dyslexia specialist at MDE, my role is to provide technical assistance and support to schools and teachers to increase professional awareness of dyslexia and instructional competence so that teachers can recognize characteristics of dyslexia and provide effective instruction to struggling readers. We know from longitudinal research conducted by Dr. Shaywitz at Yale University that up to 17% of students are dyslexic, so approximately 1 in 5. It's also estimated that approximately 80% of all students in special education with a learning disability demonstrate reading difficulties. So this is an important and timely issue for your consideration today. There's significant research to support the importance of early identification and intervention for students with dyslexia. Characteristics of dyslexia can be identified as early as preschool, which would allow intervention to begin without delay. Very recent research published just 4 months ago indicates that children who receive intervention earlier in first and second grade made twice as much progress in reading as students who received the same intervention in third grade. It's also important to note that first graders continue to improve their reading skills at faster rates even after the intervention was complete. Another striking finding is that 90% of struggling readers who receive intervention by first grade achieve grade-level reading scores, but if intervention is delayed until third grade, 75% of students continue to struggle throughout their academic careers. So these findings provide evidence on the importance of early, intensive, evidence-based intervention for reading problems in the early grades. We also know that high-quality, evidence-based reading instruction benefits all students, not just students with dyslexia. The components of effective reading instruction have been described by the International Dyslexia Association and the Center for Effective Reading Instruction, and training modules are available online to provide this information to teachers. In addition, our current reading standards in Minnesota include these same components of instruction necessary for students with and without dyslexia so that they can become successful readers. The difference is that students with dyslexia require a higher dose and more explicit instruction and repetition than a student without dyslexia in order for them to master these skills. Now that schools are required to screen students for dyslexia per recent legislation, struggling readers can be identified earlier and matched with the appropriate level of instruction as early as possible. So in my role as a dyslexia specialist, I'm happy to provide and support teachers and schools in these efforts.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Joaquin, can you quick follow-up?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that was great, and I do support the bill. I just want to know why it's not for Tier 1 and 2 teachers, because they're teaching our students in classrooms as well.
Does anybody have a quick answer to that? Because the committee does have a number of items ahead of us yet before our noon either adjournment or recess until later this evening. Does anyone have feedback for Representative
Joaquin? Mr. Chair, Representative, could you define Tier 1 and 2? I guess I'm not familiar with
Representative
that.
Representative Joaquin.
I don't know if others are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We passed a licensing bill last year that had different tiers for teachers and where you could start out at. And Tier 1 teachers are in our classrooms, so I think Tier 1 and 2 should also be receiving this training.
Yes. Mr. Chair. Go ahead.
I agree that Tier 1 and Tier 2 would benefit. When we had our work group to work on the mechanics of the bill, there was caution on including Tier 1 and Tier 2, and thus making it more difficult because of the teacher shortages and the retention issues. At this time, there was caution on including Tier 1 and Tier 2 within that.
as a way to prevent more road blocking of them getting into the field. But I completely agree with the need, because I see Tier 1 and Tier 2 as individuals who are directly working with those students first.
Representative Yoakie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to just reiterate, we do want highly qualified teachers in our classroom. Thank you.
Representative Mason.
Thank you very much, and I support the bill as well, and I know that early intervention and advocacy really helps the students with dyslexia. I just want to leave you with one story that's been with me forever. Years ago, a friend of mine had a son who was in school, and the teachers kept telling her the kid was lazy, the kid just wasn't working. And so for every night, she'd have her son sit at the table trying to do the homework. When he was in fifth grade, the family had the child take testing. He was diagnosed with dyslexia, and he was then sent to a special school for a couple of years. And the very first essay he wrote, he said, "I am so glad that I am not retarded." Think about a kid being 10 years old and living with that when we have the resources to help them early on. Thank you.
Seeing no other member questions, members of the public, Mr. Heller, I think you wanted to come down and testify on this. If I'm not mistaken, you were trying to, I think you checked in. We'll have you come down and give some brief comments today on House File 3013. And then Representative Rumbach, I have no other member questions, so we will, when Mr. Heller is done with his brief comments today, we'll go to you for closing comments before we move the bill. Mr. Heller.
Thank you, Chair, Government Operations and Education Policy and Members, for being able to testify on March 6th regarding House File 3013. Under line 1.20, again, I forgot that my name is Rick Keller, and official represent the 26th Exceptional Print Disabled. 1.20, just for your information, everybody. Last year, I pointed out that the Board of Teaching, that they do rules. And last year, now the new Board of Teaching, it's not called the Board of Teaching, as you all know. I don't know the abbreviation yet, but anyhow. The legislature is more compliant on accessibility on read out loud with the Pacific Reader, the JAWS Reader, because about 2 years ago, they took some funding from Minut and made sure that for the blind Pacific and the visually impaired, that JAWS would actually let you know what's struck through and underlined. Unless you add specifically language in here that they follow Minnesota Statute 16E.03 Subdivision 9, which is frankly important because the legislature is doing it. And I already filed a complaint with Minut, and it's gone nowhere, and the new board hasn't addressed it, and they're currently writing rules. They're currently having hearings. But because, as we know, when documents here go on a PDF, they're not fully accessible until they get an HTML. And that's a correspondence that's posted at the Data Practice Commission in 2016. You'll find it under Mr. Heller, Jason. He's the revisor. He could satisfy it, item 3. The bill doesn't come fully accessible until it gets read and gets a number on the legislature. As you know, it's not an XXX file, as you know, some bills that you've been working on as well. So my suggestion to the authors and people as you move this ahead on operations, that you just explicitly say it. So that way complaints have teeth, because right now, Minut, Office Enterprise Technology, formerly, and I talked to Kevin, the revisor, at the meeting. I go to many.
Mr. Heller? I do want to be respectful of your comments, but you're getting a little adrift from where the focus of the bill is.
Okay.
It has to do with some rulemaking, and you're bringing in another whole agency and some of your concerns about them that is not before this committee at this time. So I'm going to ask you to go to summation with your thoughts so that the author has clear understanding of what your concerns are. Thank you.
Well, the only thing I have is, since there's a state agency that's a quasi-agency, the school district and a state agency, how does since we have an Academy for the Blind, how does this sensory tool work for the blind that are blind and dyslexics? It's a question. I yield through the question to the chair, and maybe through Ms. Mason, she wanted to ask that question, if it's effective for people that are blind as well, because we do have academies that have specifically blind children. So I yield any question or through the chair for Ms. Mason to ask that question. So.
Mr. Haller, again, I appreciate your willingness to be before the committee and share your thoughts. Again, that question is a little bit out of the realm of the dyslexic part of this, because you're bringing in issues of the blind, and this is dyslexic language that we're looking at here. And so, Mr. Haller, I'm going to give you one more chance to go ahead and wrap up your comments, because the committee does have some other business that we need to have before us here today. So if you have any other final thoughts you'd like to share, we'd like to hear those, and then I want to go to Representative Rombeck, because I do not have any other member questions at this time. Mr. Haller?
I guess we'll see on the road writing. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Rombeck, I see no other questions. I'll give you the final word on House File 1330.
Sure. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, for the hearing. I'm going to reflect on the story, too. Way back when I first was elected, which is an eon ago, I had a nice conversation with a soon-to-be retiring first-grade teacher. And she said, not one kid came out of her class who couldn't read. I mean, I think the point is, it's customized. You know, you can't just have a one-size-fits-all. So,
Representative Rombeck, thank you for your work and passion on this bill. And members, I misspoke, which sometimes does happen. I said it's file 1330. It's actually file 3013. And sometimes I do have trouble transposing numbers, and so there we go here today. The chair is not exempt from that as well. Seeing no other testimony or any other business before the committee on House File 3013, I renew my motion that it be re-referred to the Committee on Education and Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion carries. Representative Backer, you are next, and we will see if we can give you the medal for the shortest bill today. The pressure is on. With that, as Representative Backer is making his way to the testifying table, I will move House File 2938 before the committee to be re-referred to the Committee on Agricultural Finance. With that, Representative Backer, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair and members. This bill would extend the 10 years for the Minnesota Agriculture Fertilizer Research and Education Council, AFREC, and it will also extend the inspection fee of 40 cents per ton. So this is due to expire this year. It's been a good program because it really allows the ag industry to do the research that they're needed. And with that, I'm going to turn over to my testifier, Mr. Anderson.
Good morning, Mr. Anderson. If you'll identify yourself for the record and the reasons to re-extend the program, that would be helpful. It's something the committee does have familiarity with, so if you want to go ahead and provide your thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Grant Anderson. I'm a farmer from Stearns County, Minnesota. Family farm, raise hogs, cattle, corn, soybeans, kidney beans, and hay. I serve as the Irrigators Association representative to the AFREC committee, and I'm the vice chair on the committee. I'm here to testify on behalf of the approval of the delaying of the sunset to another 10 years. We feel as the committee, I have letters of support from everyone on the committee recommending the sunset clause be deferred another 10 years. Feel the funds are spent wisely, and the research that is construed from those funds is directly impactful to the farmers of greater Minnesota. So I think it's a good use of our taxpayer dollars. To put it in perspective, my family farm paid in roughly $400 in tax to the AFREC Council, and that was on sales of tens of thousands of dollars of fertilizer for our farm. So that $400 is money well spent and gleans research that we can all apply to our farm.
Mr. Anderson, thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else from the public that wishes to testify on the matter before the committee, which is House File 2938? Members, questions for the bill's author? Seeing none and hearing none, Representative Backer, we will give you the final word.
Thank
on the
you.
Bill. Brevity is always appreciated. I will renew my motion that House File 2938 be re-referred to the Committee on Agricultural Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. Our final bill today is Representative Nash, as he makes his way before the to the testifying table. And what I would like to do with this, and I think we can get this done, is I want to bring the bill forward. I want to hear from testifiers who are here today for the bill, and then we'll lay it over and the committee can discuss and take amendments tomorrow on the bill. If we are not able to get that taken care of by noon today, that will save people some time this evening. But we will hear from testifiers once the bill is introduced and go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Nash, if you want to move the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move 2774 before the committee.
To be referred to state government
finance. To be referred
finance.
To state government finance, yes.
Proceed with your bill, Representative members, Nelson. Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, imagine me having an IT-related bill, I know. I have a lot of them, and I think over the last several years since I came to the legislature, I've answered a lot of questions to both my side and your side about what does IT do, what does it do here at the state, and I think that the genesis of the bill is really to create a commission where both sides have folks on it so we can better understand not just the reactive things that we've been seeing lately, but proactive and an educating perspective so that we as legislators who will ultimately appropriate funds for larger projects have a better understanding of what technology means to the state. And I was asked before we got here, how does this differ than the subcommittee on IT that we currently have? That, as the speaker put out when he first created it, was for interaction with the public from a transactional perspective. This is to look down the road more from a logistical perspective for state IT. There are a great many things that are changing in IT, and IT roughly changes 100% year over year. And my goal in creating this is to bring in industry experts from the private sector and from other government entities that are really doing IT well, and allows us to make more informed decisions as we head into the various committees where we do appropriate funds. It gives us a better and higher level of comfort. So it is different than the committee that we have, and it would last longer than the one that we have now, because if there's a change in leadership, that committee could go away. This would live longer than that. So, Mr. Chair, it's really a very simple bill.
There's a death of the bill right there. It's a simple bill.
Well, I believe it's a very simple bill, but I understand that there is an amendment. Representative Nelson and I have spoken about the amendment, so we'd like to chat about that if.
Yeah, we can take the amendment. I was going to ask the A1. It's offered by Representative Nelson. We can take that and get the bill and dispense with that. And, again, if there are individuals who have come up and want to testify on this bill, ask you to check in with our page, Santa, and she will get you queued up and ready to go here to hear your comments. Representative Nelson to the A1 amendment, sir.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And my amendment basically is I think this is a good idea to look at minutes and look at information technology because as the author stated that it's changing so fast and it's part of the infrastructure of our government. It's how we interact with our public, and we keep talking, we hear infrastructure all the time, investments about roads and bridges and sewer lines and water lines, but this is a basic infrastructure government, and we're talking, you know, part of the problem with an NLARS system that we've been having is it's a 35-year old system that we're trying to upgrade. And most companies I know, and I've talked to some people that do a minute for private company or do information technology for private companies, and they're upgrading their equipment every 5 years. Mm-hmm. If they're not, they're behind the eight ball. And we've got many systems that going forward are going to have to be upgraded, and we need to be looking at that. And that's why, with my amendment, I wanted to add two members, non-voting members, and there's some discussion of who's going to appoint them. I've got the governor appointing them as so that he'd get buy-in, whoever the governor, he or she in the future is, would get buy-in as far as having so it's not going after the governor on something. It's they're all, both sides are working together to get this done. But and so that's what my amendment does, is have two non-voting members that are IT professionals, because we can't guarantee in the future or even now that we have enough people in both bodies that have an IT background to serve on this committee. And if you don't have that IT people coming forward and giving their information and giving the utmost current up-to-date information, we can be in trouble and we make decisions that shouldn't be made or make the wrong decisions, which I think might be part of the problems we've had with some of the stuff in the past with Bennett.
Representative Nash, as the author to the bill, your wishes or
reaction
to the one amendment?
Representative Nelson and I spoke before we came in, and I think we have a solution that I would like to propose, and I spoke with Mr. Gehring about this. I like the idea of the amendment, but as I researched with staff beforehand, it's never happened that the governor has appointed to a legislative commission. But Mr. Gehring said that it would be very easy to take all of Representative Nelson's amendment language but change from governor to commission to have those people brought forward in a non-voting manner. And I would hope that Representative Nelson would accept that as something we could work on, because I know many CEOs, CISOs, CISSPs who would very much like to be involved in this, and they work for household names across our state. They have told me in meetings, Jim, tell us what you need, and we will come and help. We will come and volunteer, because we want our state IT to be the very best that it can. So if Representative Nelson would accept that, I would happily incorporate that into the bill language.
Representative Nelson, your thoughts on the concept?
Mr. Chair, as Representative Nash and I talked before, I'm open to that. I guess what the language of Mr. Gehring, that we would be changing in this amendment to add this in.
Representative Nelson, I will let Mr. Gehring share those thoughts, and it might be easier just to have the amendment drafted and bring it to the state government finance, knowing that you two have agreed with a commitment from Representative Nash that he will offer that amendment in committee if we are in agreement on that, just because I get very skittish when we start doing some of these kinds of things.
Yeah.
That one thing and two
I know.
Things
I just
off
was
the other.
I'm wondering if he has
yep.
what the language would look like and what would be changing in the amendment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, so I think you could accomplish this objective by, on line 1.4 of the amendment, delete governor and insert commission.
So it's a one-word oral amendment. It
Commissioner?
Commission.
Commission. Okay, that's
Representative Nash,
part of what we talked about, Representative Nash and I talked about ahead of time. So.
And it does not look like we need to redraft based on that. So if you want to offer the oral amendment, you go ahead, Representative Nelson.
I'll move that as an oral amendment to the A1 amendment.
Representative Nelson offers the oral amendment on line 1.4 on the A1 amendment to strike the word governor and in its place insert the word commission. All those in favor of the oral amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is the oral amendment is adopted. To the A1 amendment, any other discussion? Representative Nash, your wishes to the A1 amendment as adopted.
Mr. Chair, I would recommend adopting the amendment as amended. I think it's good, and I appreciate Representative Nelson bringing forward and working with me to incorporate some of his concerns as well.
Representative Nash moves the A1 amendment as adopted. All those in favor to House File 2774. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion carries. Is there anyone from the public who would like to testify on the matter before the committee on House File 2774 as amended? Good morning, sir. Welcome to the committee. If you identify your name and provide your thoughts to the committee.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Christopher Boozy. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor for the Minnesota Office of Legislative Auditor, also formerly one of the IT leaders in state government before I took the job with Jim Nobles. I know we're running out of time, but I wanted to share my thoughts. One of the things I've experienced both when I was in IT and now looking at this from a legislative perspective is that there is a profound issue with having legislative governance over IT. And I think this is a great bill that provides a bipartisan way for the legislature to have better governance over IT, and I fully support the bill as it's written and amended.
Sir, thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else present who would like to speak on the matter before the committee, House File 2774, as amended? Seeing none and hearing none, member questions for Representative Nash? Seeing none and hearing none, Representative Nash, if you would like to renew your motion as amended to state government finance, we may be able to proceed with the vote.
So renewed.
Representative Nash renews his motion that House File 2774, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion carries. And with that, members, we are adjourned.